Chapter 4 and 5, we're going to be looked at this on Wednesday. We got into some questions that Brother Posey prepared for us. I'm going to assign a couple scriptures right now. If I could get about four people to get ready with some passages, once again, to help me out a little bit. Somebody take Colossians 2, 13 through 14. Jack, Hebrews 8, 13. Who'll get Hebrews 18? Steve, Hebrews 9, 15. Dave Bird, and Hebrews 10:9. Tim, just be ready to go with those here in just a moment. We were looking at the questions there on page 7. I do not have PowerPoint. My computer's sick too. So, and the question we started off Wednesday night was, what is law? Remember, Deuteronomy means second law. All right, and in chapter 5, what is Moses doing in chapter 5? What's he reading to them? What's he doing? Remember, he's getting ready to head. They're getting ready to head into the Promised Land. What is chapter 5? What instructions does he give them? Yes, Allison.
He's revisiting the Ten Commandments.
Revisiting the Ten Commandments. All right. So we're going to spend a portion of the day just talking about that, going over the Ten Commandments, and then really I want to talk about the connection between that and the New Testament. And I think it's a good discussion. I think there's some good questions here. And on that third question, if you're looking at page 7 of your handout, we're going to talk about the Ten Commandments, but we're going to talk about particularly the connection between the Ten Commandments and the New Testament. I think I wrapped up study Wednesday night on this. Have you ever come across somebody who believes that we're still under the Ten Commandments? People who proclaim to be Christians. I have. I've talked to a number of people over the years, have asked me, you guys still observe the Ten Commandments, right? And when I say no, I get this look. Really? You don't observe the Ten Commandments? Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think there are those who still feel that with the law of Christ, we're still under the Ten Commandments? Thoughts? Yes, Steve.
They don't know the Bible.
Good. Yep. What else comes to your mind? Allison?
Well, every principle of the Ten Commandments is repeated in the New Testament. Now, some people might be like, that's not okay. But we are still holding a particular day in esteem, and now it's the first day of the week, and that's when we're supposed to come together.
Right.
So to me, the principles, either directly or indirectly, are all repeated in the New Testament. But that's what we're paying attention to.
Right. I think the key word there is principle. I think that's exactly right. And that's what we're going to look at these as principles. All right. Yes?
I have an uncle who's a Seventh-day Adventist, and he says that man changed the fourth commandment.
Man changed it. Who changed the fourth commandment? If we were to word it that way, I'm being careful here. Christ did. All right, we'll talk about that. I'm not going to get into the Sabbath today in any great detail. It's a great study. I would love to look at all Ten Commandments in detail, but we don't have the time. Coming back to Allison's point there, I think that's exactly right. We look at this and we say, look, or I think I made the comment on Wednesday. I've heard people say, Christians say, we're under 9 of the Ten Commandments. All right, in principle, what's wrong with that statement? I think that's a dangerous statement. Why is that? Why is it not careful to say, why is it not wise to say I'm under 9 of the 10 commandments? Dave?
Well, I'm hung up more on the word under, and I think to Allison's point, that's probably what we're disagreeing about.
Right.
These are commands, too.
Right.
Violation of these is sin. I don't think that's changed, you know, set the Sabbath thing aside.
Right.
We get all of that. It's the whole idea of how we're saved. It's the whole idea of where our salvation is and our faith is, and our understanding of grace and our understanding of our inadequacy to do anything about our salvation.
Right.
Is the much bigger issue to me, I think, to most people.
Right. I agree. And that's where we're going to head that direction. Ron, and then...
Well, they were done away with. They don't exist.
Right.
They opened the cross.
Right.
Sabbath does not exist, and so you have to, you know, understand that. We read about it, we learn from it, it's part of our understanding of the New Testament, but if they don't exist, well, then we're not under the obligation of obeying.
Right, right. Yes, sir.
God being the same yesterday, today, and forever, that his morals have never changed.
Right.
And so the only thing that changes is the situation mankind has gotten to in
right.
his plan. So her principles is correct, but his morality has always been the same.
That's right. And that's why we're going to take the discussion into grace here in a few moments. Dan.
Yeah, it's a covenant issue as well. Because that's what he says in Deuteronomy 5 also.
Right.
It's a law of the covenant that was made with the Jews and the Jews only, those who came out of Egypt and their descendants. It was not ever made with the Gentiles. That God never made that covenant with the Gentiles.
Right.
So when that covenant ends, as Hebrews points out, that law, because we have similar laws, does not mean that we're under them necessarily without finding them. We have a lot of laws in this country that other countries have. But when I violate that law, I'm not punished because England or Germany or someplace else has that law. I'm punished because that's the law I'm under.
Right.
At this point. And that's the one that I live by, is the one that I'm under. And
right.
We are in that covenant relationship with Christ.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Let's look at a couple of passages here. And what I wanted to do is just kind of remind ourselves, and I think the key is covenant. What covenant are we under? And the reason why I post that question about being under the Ten Commandments, I think we need to be careful how we word things. If we're under a new covenant, then let's speak that language. Can we talk about 9 of the 10? Absolutely. I have no issue with that. In principle, absolutely. In fact, I think we should. But I think we need to keep in mind, but let's look at, who's got Colossians 2, 13 and 14? Who's got that? Jack, please.
And you who were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven all of our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross.
Okay, what is that passage just telling us about the old law? All right, okay, nail it to the cross. Hebrews 8.13, we're going to go over this kind of quickly. Who's got Hebrews 8.13? Yes, Steve.
When he said a new covenant, he has made the first obsolete. But whatever is becoming obsolete is growing old and ready to disappear.
Okay, whole section of Hebrews there, talking about the old versus the new. Hebrews 9.15, who's got that?
Therefore, he's the mediator of the new covenant, so that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance, since a death has occurred that redeems them from the transgressions committed under the first covenant.
And then the last one. Tim?
Then he added, "Behold, I have come to do your will." He does away with the first in order to establish the second.
Okay. What did Christ do with the old law? This will kind of wrap this, kind of lead us. What did he do with it? Fulfilled. And that's, I'm glad you said that. All right. We don't want to lose sight of that. We see phrases like nailed to the cross, doing away with. But when we think about the old coming into the new system under Christ, he fulfilled that. And we never want to lose sight of that. We don't want to lose sight of that connection of what the old did. The old, Galatians 3 points this out. A tutor brought us to Christ. And I think all this should come together as we look at these things. As Christ looked at the old law, all right, he fulfilled it. New law did not go into effect until his resurrection. All right. We go on into the book of Acts and we know the events there. We won't get into that. But as this was laid out, Christ in his teachings pointed to things. In fact, in the Sermon on the Mount, he deals with some of these kind of indirectly when he talks about lust and murder and hate and those things. And I think when he's talking to the Pharisees there. So I want to get back to the point that Allison made earlier. The question is, are the Ten Commandments still in effect? I say in principle, yes. Or 9, all right? We won't argue the... But in principle, yes, they are. All right? They are still in effect. So let's take a few moments. I hope you took some time to do this. Do we have any comparable New Testament passages that would help us out with this? How about with the first commandment, no other gods before me? Did you come up with anything in the New Testament that would kind of point to this direction? No other gods before me. Come up with, yes, Allison.
Matthew 6:24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money.
right? And didn't we talked about that with idols earlier one night, about what idol worship was, even though we don't see that literally as much in our country. Anything else come up to your in your mind? Any other passages that would be suggestive that we learn in principle there are no other gods before me? I wrote down 1 Corinthians 8. Was there another hand over here? Yes, Nita.
I didn't hear Allison's, but I had 1 Corinthians 8 4.
Yes, do you have it there? Can you read it? You got it? Please, if you got it.
Therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence and that there is no God but one.
All right. So we can look at this, Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount, number of passages pointing to this. All right. Any others on this one? Get your hand up there high so I can see. Yes, sir.
Matthew 22:37, you will look to the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul.
That's right. What level does Christ take this to? And I'm not trying to say that God didn't have intentions under the old law. Don't misunderstand me there. But what level did Christ take this to? In those passages. Wait, I hope I'm wording my question right here. Our whole existence, right. That gets back to the Sermon on the Mount here for a moment, when he talks about the lust of the eyes and hatefulness and murder and the oaths and things of those things. He's taking this to a matter of the heart, all right? That's not to suggest that under the old law it wasn't a matter of the heart. God wanted their hearts too under the old law. Let's not forget that, all right? But we're now talking about the system of grace, which we'll be getting to here in just a few moments. How about number two? You shall not make for yourself any carved image. Some of the passages that were read, I think, could go along with that. Anything come to your mind on that one? I put down 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10. A couple of passages there. Acts 14 would be a good one. Galatians 5, 19 to 21. I think there's a lot of verses there that demonstrate the principle of this, and I think that's the key. All right. If you remember in our discussion on idolatry a couple Wednesday nights ago, the focus was really solely on anything, an idol is anything that comes between me and serving God. So I think there's a lot of principles laid out in that. Did you get any others on that one? All right. How about number three? You shall not take the name of the Lord God in vain. First of all, what does that mean? Take the Lord God name in vain. Yep. Yeah, using it amiss. All right. I don't want any demonstrations here, but what comes to mind? All right. Sometimes we say this, immediately we might run to the foul language or something like that. Any application of God which doesn't apply. Yes, Allison.
Invoking God's name, but not really talking to him.
Right.
That's the idea of in vain.
Exactly. Yeah. Invoking or suggesting something with God that's not there, shouldn't be there, so maybe. And what areas can we see this? I think we see this in oaths, things like that. Yes?
Something that people use a lot that's really offensive to me, and I'm sure to most Christians, is they say, oh my.
Right.
I don't think that's proper at all.
I completely agree with you. It is a phrase that is just, it's rampant. And it's one of those, if we're not careful, we catch ourselves saying, or then we give an abbreviation of it. And I'm with you on that. I think that's one we just need to completely toss. find something else to express your excitement or astonishment over something. You know? Mike?
I've always thought is making God's name not holy, mm-hmm. making it common.
Yes.
Using it to where it's an everyday expression, like OMG or something. It's just, on all of it, maybe meaningless.
Right. Yes, exactly. And all these phrases, like I said, you're exactly right. We've heard them, we see them, they're going through our heads right now, because we see them so often, does that very thing. Takes away from the holiness and sovereignty of God. And when we begin to lose that, all right, we begin to lose sight of who God is. And let's just point back to the Old Testament here real quick. Let's point back to the old law. Remember, this whole thing was not just about a peculiar people or unique people, but God wanted them to remember that He was the only God. He was to be understood and reverenced as holy. So all these are pointing to that concept or that teaching. Anything else on that one? We roll through these. Let's look at the fourth one. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Somebody help us out with that one. A couple of passages there in Ephesians. Excuse me, not Ephesians. Colossians 2, 16 through 17. 1 Corinthians 16. Galatians 4. Let's just simplify this. What day do we... What was the purpose of the Sabbath? Quick, Old Testament history. This is. I didn't tell you there's going to be a test today. There's a test today, all right? What was the purpose of the Sabbath?
Remember, because God rested on that day after creation.
Right. And you're right, let's take it, remember what? What in particular were they supposed to remember? Say it. I hear it. Okay, Passover, they were to remember a certain event. In other words, they were to remember a particular event, all right? For us today, what was established for us following the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, okay? Okay, plan of salvation, all right? The Lord's Day, this is what we're going to do today. So our focus now, under the law of Christ, under the system of grace, this is it right here. This is our... What we do here in a few moments, this is it. This is the system of grace. I don't know. There's no words I can say to describe what's going to take place here in a short order. But that's what this all points to. Let's keep going. Honor your father and mother. Every child has this verse memorized, right? What did you get, Jack?
Colossians 3:20. Children, obey your parents and everything, for this pleases the Lord.
Sorry. Ephesians 6, a couple there, exactly right, all right. And again, what does this have to do with the things we've been talking about in this Old Testament series? At least on Joshua and Deuteronomy. What's the one thing? We're going to see it in chapter 6 next week. Okay, honor your father and mother, all right? Right? This, I think, has the connection to... this is the idea of obedience. This is the idea of a listening. This is the idea of God passing these things, making sure that they remember them. How about the number 6? You shall not kill. You say, really? That's an easy one. What does the New Testament say about it? Yes, Luke.
Mark 12:31, I think, applies to a lot of those. The next couple. The second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other.
That's right. So good. That was a good passage to choose, all right? Because sometimes we might get hung up in looking for the parallel verse, all right? Where's that verse that talks about thou shalt not murder, all right? We can go to the Sermon on the Mount, Mark. I think that's a great, great verse there. What is the principle there? The principle there is love, right? Christ says there, and in Matthew, he says, take care of the issue of the heart. All right. Take care of the hatred and anger of the heart, because don't let murder happen here. Because if murder happens here, then it will happen physically. All right. If we were to take it that far, he brings it back to the whole being. All right. It's a matter of the heart. So the principles here, we think, pointing back to heart. And you're exactly right. So you shall not kill. I got 1 John 3:15, Matthew 6. Romans 13:9 is one you could plug into a lot of these if you've written that one down. You shall not commit adultery. Jews had some real issues with Christ on this one. In Matthew chapter 6. What's some great principal passages in the New Testament on this subject? Yes, read.
It's kind of long, but Galatians 5, verse 19, you start, it's talking about adultery, but then, the fruits of the Spirit.
Right, fruits of the Spirit. I'll point out what else. What other key New Testament passages point to the purity of our marriage? Yes, Carolyn.
Matthew 5:27 and following. You have heard that it was said, "You shall not commit adultery." But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery in
their heart. Right. What was the problem with the Jews and these commandments in Christ there in Matthew? What was their issue? Aaron, and then, yes?
Technicality,
yes.
Misused.
Say that again?
Misused them.
Yes, misused them. All right? For them, they were a license. They were something that they could use to say, look, I'll send it. she did this, therefore I can put her away. You know, and so they misused them, and they were missing the whole point. I see another one there. Another passage. Ah, there's a host of them in here. I'm chomping at the bit here. Yes. Yes. Say it again.
John 8:3-11.
Do you have? We'll just read one of them. Go ahead and read that passage.
Well, it's an interesting one because it kind of brings up both sides around it. But describing the woman that had been caught in adultery and placed her in this, and it said, in the future, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. You know, the law of God commands the stones of the woman, what do you say? And we know this passage is to show the grace that we're talking about.
Right.
Jesus said, don't sin no more. So those of us that have been caught up in adultery understand that this is not, it's
right. That's right. That's exactly right. And I think your point is well taken. It's the connection with grace there. Christ demonstrates that. A couple more here. I mean, Hebrews 13:4, you know, let the marriage bed be left undefiled. Just wanted to focus in on that one because there's a lot of passages that point to the purity of our covenant relationship with our wife or our husband. And remember too, let me just pause on this one. Remember too, this was something that was established all the way back in Genesis. All the way back. Even then, God's intention wasn't just the legality of the law, but the purity of the home. He started that way back then. And we know in Israel's history what happens. What happened when they prostituted with the temple prostitutes and all those things, all right? It was not just a violation of the Ten Commandments, all right? It was a violation of God's purpose, God's eternal purpose through His people. Anything else on that one? All right, let's look at the next one. You shall not steal. Got a counterverse for us there. Not a counterverse, but a passage or a principle in New Testament points to that. I've got 1 Corinthians 6:10-11. There's a whole list there. Neither fornicators nor idolaters nor thieves will inherit the kingdom of heaven. Did you come up with any other ones on stealing? And what's the principle there? Let's just, we didn't ask you. What is the principle of thou shalt not steal? Yes?
Covetousness.
Yeah. The problem there is covetousness. All right? Also, Paul points out too, what's another form of stealing? Paul points this out in Thessalonians. All right? Several times Paul talks about if a man will not work with his hands, neither shall he eat. All right? I think there's another. I think the principle is big. Yeah? Don't steal. Don't covet. Go out there and work. Go out there and work hard for and provide in the way that I've commanded you to provide. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. What does it mean to bear false witness? We're not really going into these in detail, the question is, but what does it mean to bear false witness against your neighbor?
You're telling
untruth. Yep. That's right. An untruth? What's some other words that go along this idea of bearing false witness? Gossip? What else? Yes, what's?
Perjury?
Slander? All right. I think those can be, if we were to look at this in a little deeper, we could plug a lot of those in there. But again, the idea is, and I put Romans 13:9, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. All right. Do anything that would degrade them, bring a falsehood, anything of that. All right. Was that an issue at time with the children of Israel? Absolutely. We get into some of the prophets there, and that was they were taking bribes, they were accusing people of things, just a host of things. Again, principle. And then the last one there, you shall not covet. Got a good principle verse there. A lot of verses on this one. You shall not covet. What'd you come up with? Romans 13:9 again. What does it mean to covet?
Want something that is not yours.
Yeah, wanting something that was not yours. That's right. Okay? Yep. That's right. Yes,
Jane. Hebrews 13:5, but your conduct is outside of justice. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you.
That's right. A principal study of covetousness would be contentment. When I look at this one, I think of, because the passage you read there, I think of being content, all right? What's the thing that God provides? What, food, shelter, clothing? What more do we have to worry about? Covetousness takes us out of that comfort zone, creates for within us a self, this hunger and desiring for more. And as we want more, what happens when we get more? Then we want more. There's a cycle. We saw it in the Old Testament. We see it today. It's big issue, big problem. So let's kind of wrap this section up there, all right? What's the difference in how these are presented? Help me out here. I'm losing my voice. All right? What's the difference? What do you see there? We, like I said, we could have spent a lot of time looking at a lot of passages, all right? Coming back to the comment earlier, is these are presented in principle. Mike?
Well, I think Romans 13 kind of sums it up, 13:9. It says, for this you shall not commit adultery, not commit murder, not steal, you shall not covet. If there's any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself.
That's right. There it is, summarized right there. You look at these 10 commandments, all right? For the most part, they are summarized in relationships, right? And that's one of the things that I try to keep before myself. I've said it here in classes and sermons, and I'll continue to say it, and because I firmly believe it, that when I stand before God and He looks at the things I've done or haven't done in His name, He will look at the relationships that I've had on this earth. How did I treat one another, right? I think that's just huge, and I think the whole principle there. Thoughts or comments on this section? So again, I think the ideal here, when we look at the idea of the Ten Commandments being in the New Testament, I think we can safely say that we can find 9 of the 10 teachings in principle in the New Testament. All right, how you word it is up to you. I was just being a little opinionated there. That's just my opinion on that. I just choose to be careful because in my mind, I want to keep separate from the old law and the new. So that's why I'm careful how I word things. Brent, and then...
You know, they were writing things down on parchment, skins and things at that time. But these were put in stone. And, you know, God makes that basically something that this is going to be, these are going to be statutes, these are going to be principles that are going to stay with you. And I want to stay with you forever. I don't want these to go away.
Right.
And without these, you can't be a part of me.
Right.
And in fact, when he gave those laws, the people were afraid to go up to Sinai. They wouldn't even go near God. They said, you know, Moses, somehow you were able to go talk to God, you know, face to fire, and you're alive. And so we're going to accept this as absolutely God's command to us, and we are going to obey this.
Right.
And God commended them and said, you know, this is what I've been looking for. This is what I've been waiting for.
Right.
And why couldn't we have this all along, you know? And so it's an exciting time for God, but obviously they're going to fall away later. But, you know, this is something that brings people together, makes them, shall we say, one flesh with God.
Right.
As we are to be with Christ in spirit is one. And so this is something that we have to look to as what is kind of the glue that holds us together. Shall we say?
Right, right.
What I noticed is that a lot of verses, when it talks about obeying commandments, is the word love is associated with obeying the commandments. And so, kind of, if you love God and your neighbor, you're just going to keep these commandments. That's just what's going to happen. If you truly love them.
Right.
If you don't, then yeah, it's going to be a lot harder to follow these commandments.
That's right. And this is what we're going to be focusing on now, I think, well, our time permitting, on this subject of grace. So let's look at the last, there's 3 questions there, 4, 5, and 6, the place of law, place of grace. I'm going to kind of combine those, and we'll touch on those, but I think we should kind of look at this as a whole. Let's go to 1 John 1, verse 17, and let's put this in perspective, the law. Law versus grace, faithfulness. How does this all work? All right. While you're turning there, I want to share again one of the things I've appreciated about this congregation, particularly David Posey. And David's not in here, so I'm going to talk about him here for a few moments. Is David's teaching on grace? I was looking at the website going over. I was just pulling up some of his notes for this part of the class. And over the last 20-something years he's been here, I don't know how many times he's touched on the subject of grace. I personally feel that that is very, very important. And I'm going to get to some of the reasons why here in a few moments. Because I think sometimes there's been a tendency over the years to focus so much on the doing. And then where do we plug the grace in? And then we're worried that we don't want to be like another group that thinks grace is just a touchy-feely that falls on you. So we got to be sure that we have the works in there, which is all biblically correct. But I think sometimes, I know for me growing up, I think I missed the big picture of grace. I was more worried about making sure that I explained grace right versus really understanding it. And I'm still trying to get it. There are still times I forget this whole concept of God's grace. I forget the impact of what's going on here in my life. Great, and I'm sure most of us have been through that and had those thoughts. And we'll get to that here in a few moments. John 1:17. I did say John 1:17, didn't I? Did I say 1 John? I am so sorry. John 1:17. I'll read it. I knew that wasn't right. Moses gave the law, but grace and truth came through Christ. All right, I'll read that along. John 1:17. Moses gave the law, but grace and truth came through Christ. What is John saying here? Moses gave the law, but grace and truth came through Christ. What's the thought here? What, Jack?
Well, one thing is, I don't think they're the same thing, or he wouldn't be making a distinction.
That's right. They're not the same thing. What else? I think you're right. Thoughts? Dan?
There's also a contrast between what Moses could do and what Christ could do.
That's right.
Moses brought the law, but Christ brought the salvation through his sacrifice and his resurrection. So that couldn't come through them.
That's right.
Not that they didn't have grace back then. Our truth. They had both of those. But the solution to sin and disobedience
to
the law was found in
Christ. That's right. That's right. Yes, Wally.
Well, they had truth.
Yep.
But it was in part. And then when that which was perfect came, then they had the whole truth, if you will, like Paul.
Yeah, 1 Corinthians 13, right.
Like Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. So.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yes.
I mean, it kind of feels like Moses gave the law, and then like Jesus showed the way that it should be executed properly. And
right.
It should be with grace and with truth, not all one or all the other, but with this ideally perfect balance of the two that Jesus could show that we're always struggling to try and try and do within our own lives.
That's right. Let's with that. Let's put this out there. What was the problem with the law? Let's not jump into grace yet. What was the problem with the law? There was issues with it, Aaron.
Well, in my mind, there was no salvation from sins until Christ came and brought salvation.
Right.
And then he brought grace and truth.
Right. That's right. Right? So, Aaron, what was your thoughts?
In addition to that, it lent itself to being boxed into technicalities like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
And so Jesus kind of, like Sarah said, shows us the application of that, what that looks like.
Right.
Not just, okay, well, it doesn't say that, but it does say that.
Right.
You know, Jesus, like you said, kind of brings it back to the heart issue of, okay, well, you know, what does that mean?
Right, right. Keep the thought. Al, did you have your...
Can't keep it perfectly.
That's right. Couldn't keep it for... Yes, sir.
The law could not forgive sins, but where it was wiped out.
That's right.
It could only overlook it.
That's right.
For grace, in order for God to show his true attribute of love, kindness, and mercy, which is grace.
Right.
To the angels, he's created mankind, and grace comes on the forgiveness of sins.
Right.
Where he did not forgive the angels.
Right. Law, we talked about this a little bit on Wednesday. Law, we understand what law is. And in this case, you know, I think, Mike, you read there from Deuteronomy. There was a passage there. I forget what it was on Wednesday that you went to. law, God brought the law and made them realize. Paul talks about this in Romans a lot, all right? Made them realize law makes you aware of what? Okay, we could say right and wrong, aware of sin. That's it. All right? The problem is, exactly, number one, it didn't do anything for you. In other words, law didn't save us. All right? And when you, the problem is, and this is what you pointed to, Al, if I try to, the problem is I try to keep the law perfectly, therefore I'm making the law my savior. All right? It didn't happen under the Old Testament. It's not going to happen now. All right? And this is where the picture of Christ and grace comes in. I saw a hand back here. Wally.
Well, in part, that's where the idea of being just and the justifier come together. Because the just part of God convicts us, and the justifier part of God in Christ is what saves us, because that sacrifice is made. Back in Hebrews 9, we went there, but only just very briefly,
right.
Talking about the two laws. Both laws came with blood and were instituted through blood, but only the blood of Christ was able to completely fulfill everything as it should be.
Right. Let's kind of put this together. If they see any hands there, please shoot them up there a little bit. I'm just going to throw some questions out there. Can we understand grace apart from law and sin?
No.
You're right. I don't think we can. Correct me if I'm wrong. I cannot fully understand and get a grip of grace until I understand what law and sin is, all right? Now, one of the things I just want to mention, which I don't see as an issue here, but we run into, how is grace kind of thrown around today? We talk about things being cheapened, all right? Let's talk about grace from how has grace been cheapened in now?
I think because we've made grace law, we have decided that, well, we are forgiven no matter what we do. And so we tend to worry not so much about what God wants, but what we want.
Right. Okay. What else? How has grace... Yes, Charlotte.
The attitude sort of like, I can basically do what I want because now the grace will cover me, or the bed will be easier to be wrong in God's eyes.
Right.
For granted, so to speak.
Right. The idea, the general principle, or say, false teaching on grace, is something that grabs a hold of you. You have no really control, and no matter what you do, the grace is going to guide you into truth. You're going to do right because grace has control of you. All right. Where the scriptures teach just the opposite of that. Yes, sir. Yes.
What you have to do to have.
Exactly. That's exactly right. No qualifications for it. Aaron.
Yeah, similarly, it forgets about most of Romans, which is how we're supposed to be transformed. And so there's a change that is required.
Right.
In order to receive that.
Right. Yes, Carolyn.
I think on the other spectrum, though, we put too much emphasis on works and just cram grace into that, we have the same problem.
Right.
Because the grace is only found through Jesus and Him dying on the cross, and I think Isaiah 53 says that very clearly. And so we have to be careful of finding grace where God puts it and put it there and not be on either end of the spectrum.
That's right. Let me ask you another question. Was there grace in the giving of the law? Think about that. Talking about the law of Moses, all right? Was there grace in the giving of the law? Yes.
Well, part of what giving the law to them made was a very special and pure group.
Right.
You didn't give that, I think we pointed that out earlier, you didn't give that law to just anyone.
Right.
And part of giving that law to them was marking them out as, you're my special people. Because of that, this is the law I'm going to give to you. If they could view it as a burden, or they could view it as a very special opportunity to show the rest of the world who God is and what He wants in relationship with people.
That's right. Yes? Did I see another hand? Yes, Mike.
It was through the law that Israel really found out about the faithfulness, the long-suffering, and the love of God. And if that's not grace, I don't know what is.
Right.
That's where it came.
Right. And that's, yeah, I think the answer to that is yes, there was grace in the giving of the law. Not saying that that had the grace that we see in the New Testament, right? But there was grace in the giving of the law. We've got about a minute here. Let's look at one more passage. Romans 7:13. No, actually, Ephesians 2:8. Did we look at Ephesians 2:8? No, Ephesians 2:8. Let's look at one more passage here. Because we'll continue this on Wednesday night. Whoever's got that. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8. This is a... who's got it? Luke.
For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing, it is the gift of God.
Okay. What is this saying? What is Paul saying here? We are saved by what? By grace through what?
Faith.
This is what we're going to talk about on Wednesday night. All right? Because I think we need, I'm confident, we need to plug these in. All right? What is the through faith? We, a lot of times, will qualify that. We'll see. Well, be sure you say obedient faith. All right? I don't think that's necessary. That's personal opinion there. But what is it? It's faith. Okay? You are saved by grace through faith. I'm going to plant this seed today. This is our discussion topic for Wednesday night. And then look at the second half of that. It's a great, I don't want to, it's not a definition of grace, but it's a great explanation to help us understand what God's done for us. This is not your own doing. It is the gift of God. All right? So your assignment for Wednesday is to give this verse some good thought, careful study. Because we're going to take this and continue this thought on grace. And we'll wrap it up.